Welcome to Blocked and Reported. I'm Katie Herzog, and sitting in today while Jesse is busy trying to convince a pretty German tourist that he is not Sam Bankman-Fried, we have River Page. River is a staff writer at Pirate Wires, and I have a feeling this is going to be one of our least family-friendly episodes. So if you are listening with the kids right now, stop what you are doing, stuff tampons in their ears, and then start listening again. River, welcome to Blocked and Reported.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We've got a great show today. You're going to lead a segment about Aisha Erotica. I don't know who or what that is, but again, probably not safe for the kids. We're also going to follow up on the next Benedict story. But before we get to that, let's talk about you. Now, most of the guest hosts we've had so far are people I know, but you are the exception to that. This is our first time speaking. You're my wild card. I know almost nothing about you except for the fact that you were conceived during an acid binge at your mom's sweet 16 birthday party, and her parents didn't find out she was pregnant until she was 6 months along and a cousin ratted her out. Oh, and her father was a Baptist preacher and her friends crowdfunded money for an abortion, but she backed out at the last minute, thus leading to you. Other than that, I know almost nothing about you. I'm not even sure where you live, although if I had to guess, I would say Florida. Is it Florida?
Yeah, I live in Florida now. I live in Fort Lauderdale, but I grew up in Texas, actually. But it's like really close to Louisiana, which just explains the behavior.
So you're from Texas. You live in Florida now. Natural progression for a gay man.
Right, yeah.
But who are you?
Well, I'm a staff writer at Pirate Wires. I've been writing for a while. Compact, Washington Examiner, American Affairs, some other places like that. I started writing in the pandemic or shortly before the pandemic, I think. It was just like something that happened for me being on Twitter and people asking me to write takes that I was writing. And now I do more, I guess, like technical, like real journalism.
Yeah, it's the Twitter to journalism pipeline. And that's how I found you. I absolutely love your Twitter. It's very funny. Your handle is River is Nice, which is not how I would describe you from Twitter. You tweet like someone who doesn't have a boss, which I guess might be sort of true because your boss is Mike Solana.
Yeah.
But your Twitter is very funny. And your beat for what you're actually writing, it seems to be somewhat aligned with mine, which I think of as like niche online shit that will disturb normal people. Mm-hmm. And I think the first piece of yours that I read was about the subreddit r/meth, which is probably the closest a sober person can get to being inside of Hunter Biden's brain. So tell me about that piece. What drew you to the online world of meth heads and what did you find there?
Well, I mean, like a lot of writers, I had like an Adderall addiction at one point. And so I think I understand like the mind of a meth head a little bit.
Oh, it's funny that you should mention Adderall because yesterday I was reading this like recently out series on Adderall from Pioneer Works. It's called Club Mad: Dispatches from the Adderall Epidemic. And it turns out that apparently all writers are on Adderall. I had no idea that I'm the only one who was like not actually taking performance enhancing drugs.
You probably are, honestly. Well, I think I'm the only person in my work who does it, but I know so many writers who do it. I mean, I'm not like a fiend like I used to be. Like when I think that's probably why I'm a writer though, is because I was like tweeting these long ass like threads, just like going off in the middle of the night on Twitter, like during like 2020.
Okay, so this is a lesson to anybody considering journalism school. You could spend $40,000 a year to go to Columbia, or you could take a bunch of Adderall and just tweet through it.
Yeah, it's like $40 for a generic. I mean, go ahead, go to Walgreens, get meth.
Yeah, this also explains how Jesse gets so much done. One of us is at a disadvantage here.
Right. Yeah. I guess it was interesting to me because I was like, well, I feel like this has only really helped me. Like, it's maybe like tweet some like crazy things I later deleted, but I didn't like lose my house or something. You know what I mean? Kind of wondered. I was like, what's the difference between like meth and Adderall and like what are all these people doing?
You get one from a doctor. That seems to be the difference.
Pretty much, yeah. They're also really funny on there. As I dug deeper into, like, as I just wasted more and more of my time just scrolling through r/meth, I was like, well, I need to write about these people. And I talked to a guy sort of like led me through, and he was explaining all of their internal drama, because of course they're drama, right? Because everybody's on meth, so they're all like plotting against each other
while masturbating furiously.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of like jacking off on there, selling drugs, a lot of like really weird SpongeBob memes about like stealing copper wiring and shit. They're a lot smarter than I think most people perceive the average drug addict to be. And they did seem to, it seemed very close-knit. Like people worried about other people when they stopped posting because they were like, mm-hmm. oh, did they OD or they go to jail or whatever. It was a very human place. I think that's what surprised me the most.
Did this entice you to try meth yourself? I mean, you are a Florida gay. I assume you've already done it.
No, I've actually never done meth because I know I would like it so much. Like that was when the first time I did cocaine, I was like, oh, this could be a problem for me. So I only do it socially.
Well, that's a really good rule to live by.
Right, exactly.
Another story of yours that I enjoyed was called Coomer Conversion Therapy. Is that how you pronounce it? Coomer?
Coomer? Yeah. You've never heard Coomer?
No. And I like, look, I'm a 40-year-old lesbian. I spend all of my time with a golden doodle.
Yeah, but you run this podcast.
That's true. I like can't even describe who these people are and what they do. So please just give us a rundown, starting with that term Coomer. Define that.
I mean, a Coomer is, I guess it's close to the word gooner. They're kind of used interchangeably now. It's just like a porn addict, basically.
There's a lot of coomers in the meth community, I imagine.
There are, yeah. So about 2 years ago, I fell into an internet rabbit hole and discovered this entire online subculture of gay guys who are attempting to turn themselves straight with pornography, or at least that's how it appears to the outside. We'll get to that later. First, let me read one of the tweets I cited so we get a feel for kind of what I'm talking about here. Quote, I literally want a woman to strap me down, force feed me Viagra, and bribe my gay cock until I can't remember why I was ever gay in the first place. Convert me. Fix my dick. Turn me straight. Hashtag gay straight. Hashtag conversion. Hashtag dicks are for chicks. Twitter user at going straight. Basically, it's a lot of straight porn videos, particularly hypnosis videos. If you're familiar with sissy hypno stuff, it's basically like that, but for heterosexuality instead of Andrea Longshu's memoirs. I mean, the stuff that she put in females, it's like, girl, it's like it was written in Guantanamo Bay. I was like, you don't have to say all that. This is
stuff that you should not admit to people. Yeah, she writes about how she says, literally, sissy porn made me trans.
I'm like, were you under duress? Like, you didn't have to say that.
Right.
I'm kind of glad that she did, though.
Right. I wonder if she told her doctor that or if she wouldn't said, no, it's dysphoria. Really? Born this way.
Yeah, I know. I think like you should be required to read females in medical school, honestly.
And that's how you learn what a woman is. A gaping hole, according to Andrea Longshu's definition. Okay, so this group, gay to straight, are these are guys who are actually gay. They're like a 6 on the Kinsey scale. Or are these guys who are bisexual, are straight or straight, do you think, who are just like doing this for clicks?
They are gay. I think some of them were probably bisexual, and that's part of it. A lot of the guys I talked to, like this one guy, Alexis, he told me he identified as gay from his early teen years. He was supported by his family and so on. But as he got older, he started like watching straight porn and feeling guilty about it. And then another guy.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. Thought he was gay as a teenager because he like fell in love with another boy. He was like 14. And then he ended up in a relationship with a woman he lost his virginity to. So I think like a lot of it is guys who thought they were gay or like came out as gay. And now they sort of feel sort of like suffocated by that identity, and like boxed in by it. It sounds like something that you're really not supposed to say because people are like, no, but like everybody knows when you're like, you know,
right. Born this way.
I didn't know that. This is the thing too. Like a lot of gay guys are like, I knew I was gay when I was 4. And I'm totally. Like, I didn't like at all. Like I didn't even know when I was like 14.
Did you grow up in a conservative environment?
Oh yeah. Like my parents, my biological dad like became like a meth dealer, but my mom, she kind of like turned her life around or whatever, and she got remarried.
And she literally had you when you were 16, when she was 16, is that
right? And then she had my brother on her 18th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. Same guy though, same baby daddy who was a piece of shit, but I mean, I guess that's good. You know, if you're a teenager, they like keep the baby daddy consistent.
Yeah.
But then she got they broke up and he married her cousin. This is some real redneck shit. Like I have a half brother who's also like my second cousin. Anyway, and my mom turns her life around and she becomes like a youth pastor. So obviously, like she was not cool with the gay shit. And I mean, that was that could have been part of the reason I was confused. I was also fucking women in high school, so that was probably another part of the reason I was confused.
Probably. Yeah, I didn't realize that I was gay until I was like 20.
Yeah.
And you know, I sort of make fun of this idea that like visibility matters. It seems so trite and silly to me, but in my case, like, it actually did matter because I literally didn't know that there could be like gay women that I could be attracted to, because my only model for gay women were like Rosie O'Donnell and Ellen. And I was like, I don't want to fuck those bitches. Yeah. Those are not my type. Right. And so it took like going to college and meeting women who were femme to be like, oh, actually, this is what's going on.
Yeah. With the gay stuff, I guess people always just thought you could be like, oh, I changed my mind. And I do feel like it's maybe like that for women. I do know women who are,
yes,
were like, I'm a lesbian in college, and then they're like a housewife at 30.
Oh, totally. It's incredible. I mean, there's a term for it. It's incredibly common. And with men, much less common. And I think probably some of that is social pressure. But I think the other thing is that female sexuality is just straight up more fluid. I've really kind of changed my opinion about this in recent years after talking to sexologists who argue that the concept of sexual orientation doesn't even apply to females the way it does to males. Men are much more likely to be like a 1 or a 6 on the Kinsey scale, exclusively homosexual or exclusively heterosexual, mm-hmm. whereas women are much more likely to be bisexual, to be fluid. And I think that's also true of, you know, hardcore dykes. I know a lot of dykes who watch gay male porn, like mm-hmm. gold star lesbians who watch gay men having sex and find that erotic.
Yeah. I honestly still don't know like what they're getting out of that, because I also know lesbians who do that.
Yeah, I find it strange.
But I mean, I think like that's what you said about the Kinsey scale is true. But I do think there are like a non-significant amount of men who are like somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. and there's like gay bisexual and straight bisexual, just to say like closeted or out. You know what I mean? Because I think it's like if you come out as bisexual and you start fucking men, like you mm-hmm. inevitably just kind of end up being gay usually, because it's so much easier.
Yeah, people think that male bisexuality is a stepping stone on the way to gay.
Yeah,
and they think that female bisexuality is a like a lie or a stepping stone on the way to being married with children to a man.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think like it probably is like easier, I guess, for some people to come out as bisexual, but I think it's also a stepping stone to being gay, because like, you can get on, if you're like in your 20s and you're horny and you just want to get laid, like you can get on Grindr and get laid in like 10 seconds. Yeah. And dating women actually takes effort.
Yeah. Okay. And so the guys that you were writing about in this piece, how do you differentiate this population from like the classic story of like the conversion therapy or the ex-gay, the guy who is trying so hard not to be gay because he thinks that being gay will make him go to hell, or there's some like religious baggage tied up in it? How is this population different?
I mean, they are posting porn here. I think some of it is like cultural hangups, but it seems to be more of like the term gay, not so much homosexuality. I think it's like actually gay identity is what they have a problem with, because gay identity mm-hmm. is a social construct, even if homosexuality isn't. It has all of these implications of like, oh, you like poppers and Charlie XCX and,
yeah.
and you talk with yeah. a lisp and whatever. And
you're wearing a tank top.
Right. And I think that a lot of people don't feel comfortable with that. And I think when people say they're not comfortable with that, the automatic reaction from fags is like, oh, this is internalized homophobia. And I'm like, mm-hmm. there's nothing inherent about like wanting to go about being gay and wanting to go to a circuit party. You know what I mean? I actually quoted Mark Simpson. He coined the term metrosexual, and he wrote this book called Anti-Gay in the 90s, which was sort of a collection of essays against gay liberation, question mark. It seems kind of complicated, but he's openly gay, so he can do it. It's fine. But he sort of describes the point I'm trying to make here better than I can. He compared coming out to an evangelical experience, and he said, to be reborn, you have to destroy the person that existed before. So the out person now recalls that he was gay from the earliest age, before he encountered puberty, before the afterbirth was cold, etc. Early playground friendships with members of the same sex are now seen for what they were, passionate gay attachments, which no one straight could possibly have entertained. On the other hand, any encounters with, or interest in, or marriage to the opposite sex is now quite rightly seen as nothing but an ill-judged attempt to satisfy one's peers, parents, guilt, false consciousness, or just sisterly feeling. You know the scenario, I thought I loved you, but really I just envied your makeup skills. And I think like that is maybe at the root of a lot of what I was seeing. At least for like the ones I talked to, some of them wouldn't talk to me. And some of the ones I did talk to, they basically told me that for some of these guys, it was maybe just some sort of weird like masculinity fetish, where like what's the most masculine thing you can do, I guess, is fuck a woman if you're gay.
It's bizarre in some ways because it seems so antithetical to gay liberation, but I think there's actually is something a little bit liberated about this. Like people get so stuck in their own identities that a gay man having sex with a woman or a lesbian having sex with a man can seem almost like a betrayal to the wider queer community. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm just starting to believe increasingly that for most people, sexuality is somewhere, really is somewhere between totally gay and totally straight. And environment and circumstance really do play a bigger role than we think right now. I mean, these things sort of change, but this idea that we're just born this way, I no longer think that that's a totally accurate way of describing sexual orientation. I do think there's some, maybe not a choice in attraction, but there is a choice. We do have a choice in who and how we behave, assuming that free will is an actual thing, and where we live, what era that we grow up in. I think all of this has a huge impact on people coming out and their behavior and things like this. So I find this a very interesting subculture.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to the main event, I want to briefly discuss the most recent update to the Next Benedict case. So Next was the 16-year-old Oklahoma high school student who died last month. Some early media reports erroneously claim that Next was killed during or after a transphobic attack in the bathroom at school. And some activists and media explicitly blame the social media account Libs of TikTok. Brad Palumbo and I did an episode on that a few weeks back. And since then, the toxicology report on Benedict has been released. And it turned out she overdosed and the medical examiner ruled it a suicide. River, did you follow this case?
I followed it a little bit. I remember when it first broke, someone posted a video of a cop talking to Next Benedict in the hospital after the assault. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, we were just arguing and whatever. But the post was like, Next was beaten to death because she was non-binary or whatever. I'm like, well, she's like talking to the cop in here and she seems actually fine. She doesn't seem like she's dying.
Right. She seemed fine in that. And I think what people assumed was that, you know, she had some sort of head trauma and then like spontaneously died the next day. And it turns out that's not actually what happened at all. So the New York Times this week published a follow-up on this. They report that the Tulsa DA called the fight between Next and these other girls that happened in the bathroom mutual combat. And apparently what happened is that Next and these girls didn't know each other. So the narrative that spread was that Next had been like horrifically bullied, presumably by these girls who attacked her in the bathroom for being non-binary. It turned out that they didn't know each other. And Next actually said that to the cop in the video that you're referring to. And then the New York Times reports that they were apparently in-school suspension together. They had some beef. And then they were in the bathroom. The other girls made fun of Next's laugh. She poured water on them. Fight ensues. So Next was not beaten to death, nor did she die of a head injury, as many expected. But the story really did very, very quickly mutate into allegations. Not even allegations. It was just known that this was a hate crime, even though there was very little evidence. So I was trying to find the genesis of that story. Like, where did that come from? Who was responsible for claiming that this was a hate crime and claiming that Next had been murdered or at the very least was the victim of manslaughter? And this might not be the earliest mention, but the earliest one that I was able to find came from Freedom Oklahoma, which is an LGBTQ activist group in Tulsa. They had a post on their website called Rest in Pride, Next Benedict. It begins, "Last week, we were made aware of a possible hate-motivated attack in the Owosso School District, leading to the death of the targeted student." And they go on to explicitly blame Chaya Rychik and Libs of TikTok. And I think that this is where this started, although if anyone can find an earlier source, I'd be interested to see that. Regardless, activists and some media absolutely ran with this narrative, despite not having a clue about what actually happened. And there are two corrections on that blog post. Here's what they're about. One, Freedom Oklahoma erroneously said that Nex was Cherokee when in fact she was Choctaw. And two, they apologized for using the term rest in power because apparently that can only be used if the deceased is black.
What is the ranking between like blacks and Indians at this point? Like
seriously.
Yeah.
Quote, we have several folks, thank you, reach out to us to let us know that while folks have long appropriated rest in power, it's language rooted in honoring black lives and should be reserved for black folks. Always black folks, maybe black bodies. Never black people.
Yeah.
It goes on, while we didn't intend harm, we take responsibility for the harm we caused and not being more thoughtful in our language on a graphic that became widely shared. We wanted to start to repair that harm with a more appropriate update. Here, honoring Nex with the phrase, rest in pride. Whoopsies. Didn't mean to use a black word on the Cherokee kid. I mean, Choctaw kid. But more importantly, this group turned what should have been a private tragedy in this family and in this community into a national event. This kid was just bait. And then when it turns out that this wasn't a hate crime or a murder or even an unprovoked attack in the bathroom, the same group and other activists just reframe it as, well, okay, Nex was bullied into suicide because they were trans and therefore it's still Libs of TikTok's fault.
There's always been this endless search for another Matt Shepard.
Oh my God,
I
yeah.
feel like it's been going on for, I mean, even the Matt Shepard case. I mean, there's an entire book written about this. Yeah. I wrote about it a little bit on Compact. Like, I mean, that story is a little more complicated than people are willing to admit.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the show, but for anybody who's missed that, a guy named Stephen Jimenez went to Laramie, Wyoming, and he spent like over 10 years interviewing people in the community to write this book. He's a gay man himself. And he, after doing a more investigation than anybody had done into this case, he concluded that Matthew Shepard died in a drug deal gone over meth, a drug deal gone wrong. And in fact, one of his killers had been his lover at one point. So this narrative that this was all based on this homophobic attack just really does not appear to be true. And after Jimenez wrote this book, he was absolutely smeared in the gay press. And I didn't learn this until just a couple of years ago. And this is one of these things that learning it like really shifted my perspective on media and activism, because we have spent 20 years being told that he is a martyr.
They just made an HBO documentary like last year, I think.
I wonder if they're going to include the meth storyline. Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I doubt it because it looked like a total like hagiography right. from the trailer right. that I saw.
So very similar to the case of Nex Benedict, these activists basically erase the human being, the actual individual involved in this story, and turn this person into a martyr for their own cause. I find it really fucking gross.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, you don't know like what was going on in the kid's life. And
right.
It feels especially gross when there's a kid involved.
It's a child. It's a child.
Right. I mean, if I, you know, die, by all means, politicize my death. Like, I would actually think it'd be funny if, like, it was politicized for something I had nothing to do with, like animal rights activism
yeah.
or
yeah, totally.
You know, getting rid of the estate tax, if you want to like, turn it that way. I mean, I don't care, yeah.
Yeah, he was murdered over the estate tax. And so activist groups do this kind of thing all the time. And I almost don't even blame the activist groups because that's their role, is to use these cases to exert public pressure. The people I really blame are the media outlets that just go along with this. And in particular, are crack misinformation reporters who are constantly going on about misinformation and disinformation when it comes from, for instance, Libs of TikTok, but will not even lift a finger to find out what actually happened and why this kid is dead now.
I mean, didn't Sleepy Joe fucking comment on this? Like, I mean, the fucking president was like, Nex was bullied to death. I mean, that you don't really get much more high profile than that.
So nobody changes their minds. They just reframe the narrative. So it continues to be Chaya Rychik's fault, who, by the way, I can't fucking stand. What's your opinion on Libs of TikTok?
When I did you see the video with her and Taylor Lorenz?
Oh my God, yes. We did a whole emergency podcast episode about it.
Really? Okay. I missed that one. I mean, seeing her live and in person and on that random street corner or whatever, I was like, this is not the sophisticated operator, like one woman, trans genocide, you know, person, like that people think that she is.
She's basically too dumb to cause a genocide.
I liked when she was on when she was talking to Taylor, and she claimed that she had like never met a gay person until she learned about gay people through Twitter or something.
I mean, she tweets like someone who just got out of the shuttle. She is like she is a real Orthodox Jew. Yeah. She is encountering the modern world for the first time, and she is shocked and appalled by what she sees.
Right. Yeah. Some of the stuff she's dug up has been interesting fodder for everyone to go through. But
totally.
I mean, if she weren't doing it, somebody else would be, I think, just because some of this shit has gotten fucking insane. I mean, I don't like everything that she brings up. Like some of it just doesn't seem really relevant to me at all. But it is weird how like people have just completely turned her into like this figure that's like sitting in the eagle's nest, like plotting like the destruction of like trans teens or whatever.
She's too Jewish and she's too dumb to be in the eagle's nest.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that she is a like genius mastermind. Some of what I do have an issue with some of what she does, and some of what she does, like if she continued to do what she was doing in the beginning, which is just like without commentary, post these things that people would send her on TikTok, mm-hmm. I would have less of an issue. But she's editorializing in a way that I think does encourage basically the rise in homophobia. And I saw some polling the other day. This is a Guardian headline. Poll shows U.S. support for LGBTQ protections falling for the first time since 2015. That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me in part because I'm like, I don't even know if I support all of them now. You know what I mean?
Totally. We are so annoying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, LGBTQ, it's like, what do you mean by that? Do you mean like, right, I'm not going to get denied like an apartment because I'm married to a man? Or do you mean that like a 12-year-old should be able to,
right,
you know, go on cross-sex hormones? Like, what do you actually mean by that? And I think like the fact that we've put all of these different political issues together has led to, you know, because used to when you asked that question, it was like about anti-discrimination and like gay marriage or whatever. And now nobody knows what the fuck you're talking about. They don't know if you're talking. It's, I mean, and you hate to, I hate to say it because I do have like trans friends who I like and like, but it is kind of their fault a little bit. It's especially the stuff with the kids that a lot of people just aren't comfortable with.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. And it's been sort of shocking how quickly public support has turned on this. Like in 2016, I'm from North Carolina. In 2016, the then governor, Pat McCrory, who was a Republican, he was fairly popular in a purple state. And then he made a huge strategic error, which was supporting a bathroom bill that would limit, you know, people's ability to use the bathroom of the gender that they identify with in public accommodation. And there was a massive backlash. All of these, you know, musical artists and sports teams and companies decided they were going to take their business out of North Carolina. And this had a real impact. He ended up losing his election. It was close, but he ended up losing to a Democrat. And I think this was a direct result of this his support for this bathroom bill. And then today, you know, how many years later? This is 8 years later. I think a bathroom bill in North Carolina would actually probably do pretty well. And I think the thing that has changed since then is that activists just push too fucking hard. And this is, you know, I think a lot of people would probably be offended to hear this, but like the two specific issues where I think that trans activists have lost the public are women's sports and pediatric transition, sex changes for kids. These are loser issues. And in more moderate states, you can see the backlash in politics and also in polling. And so, yes, so like this is kind of their fault.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see more homophobia online or in the real world than you did 10 years ago?
I wouldn't say in the real world. I mean, I lived in Fort Lauderdale for like a year, and I'm actually about to move back to Pensacola, Florida, which is, I mean, like really southern, but pretty gay. I mean, that's where I've lived like most of my adult life. And I've honestly like never really encountered homophobia there. Like, I mean, somebody's calling me a faggot for like cutting them off in traffic, but I also do that. So, you know, like, I don't
really
get to...
That might have nothing to do with your sexuality.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a neutral word.
So, it just means bad driver.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's because, like, I guess the South is kind of homophobic, but like people are also, there's a weird, like people are non-confrontational most of the time, like to your face. Mm-hmm. Online, you definitely see more homophobia. Like I've seen people who are like, well, actually, if we gave all the gay guys ivermectin, they would stop fucking each other. And I'm like, what are you talking about? There's like a lot of weird, you know, we need to cure homosexuality. I've also seen a lot of stuff about people being really weird about like gay guys around kids in a way that like I hadn't really seen in a long time. So yeah, I definitely have seen it. And I think that it's because we're actually going back in a way. I've been reading a lot about like early gay activism, and it was kind of wild where they were like, should we let NAMBLA march in the pride parade? Like, and, you know, people talking about we need to destroy the institution of marriage. We shouldn't be joining it because it's misogynistic and whatever. And a lot of the like really sort of like, I don't know if you would say like revolutionary rhetoric or whatever. And then the conservatives kind of won, you know, where they were like, actually, we just want to like go to the suburbs and get married and adopt kids and, you know, shop at Williams-Sonoma or whatever.
Right. And it was effective.
It was effective. And I think the trans movement is kind of going through that early stage now where you do have some trans people who are like, I basically just want to be left alone. And then you have some trans people who are like, we destroy the idea of like gender and like you should be able to decide when you're 10. And you know, I think they'll eventually have their the conservatives will eventually win out. But the danger with it is that a lot of people aren't distinguishing between this conversation that's happening in the trans activist movement and gay people. And that's a kind of a problem.
Yeah, we all get lumped in together. And I don't think I've seen any like additional homophobia in real life. The places where I am at, I'm unlikely to see much homophobia. But online, way more homophobia. Lots of openly calling gay men groomers and pedophiles and reverting to this, to these tropes that I think gay activists did a pretty good job of distancing the community from, but it all seems to be back, which is my main problem with people like Chai Rychik and James Lindsay using language like that, like calling people groomers, especially when they're not talking about actual child molestation. I think especially for people who don't actually have a lot of gay people in their lives and don't understand that we are just like as boring as everybody else, at least lesbians are. Gay men, maybe not so much. Lesbians, we don't go to circuit parties. you know, it gives them this idea that gay people really are deviants, which activists worked really fucking hard and were successful at dismantling that idea for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do a couple of ads for our free listeners and then housekeeping.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person too?
That's right, that's the sound of selling everywhere, online, in-store, on social media, and beyond.
Shopify POS, no, not that POS, is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory to building relationships with customers and managing orders, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person, backed by everything you need to sell online.
With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock.
Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok, if it's still legal by the time you hear this, to Instagram and beyond.
Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify.
We should try this with our horrible merch store.
Oh my God, this is good. This synergy opportunity.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/barpod, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/barpod to take your retail business to the next level today. Please help us with our merch. Oh my God.
That's shopify.com/barpod.
Katie, life is so busy these days that it's easy to get distracted and lose sight of what matters. Video games, podcasts, social media. But there are more important things, like free speech, because we couldn't even have video games and podcasts and social media without free speech.
I mean, yeah, free speech is definitely one of my top 50 favorite rights. I mean, but sometimes I worry, who's looking out for our free speech rights?
Fire is, that's who. Because there's a new sheriff in town. Or not a new sheriff, but the same sheriff, except he got a promotion to chief sheriff, and he's wearing a new uniform.
Okay, we got it.
The point is people should check out FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression.
Yeah, you might know FIRE as a campus organization, but now there's so much more. They're not just focused on education anymore. They're now defending your free speech and individual liberties. Yes, Jesse, including you.
Even me?
Even you.
Yes, FIRE's mission is to defend and sustain the individual rights of all Americans, even Jesse's, to free speech and free thought. FIRE educates Americans about the importance of these inalienable rights, promotes a culture of respect for these rights, and provides a means to preserve them.
The freedom to express yourself is priceless.
I don't know about priceless.
Okay, I'm willing to negotiate.
Okay, Katie, I will sell you my right to self-expression for $75.75.
Okay, let's talk about this after the ad. Okay. As I was saying before Jesse interrupted me, your freedom to express yourself is priceless, but it's under threat. Joining the movement to protect that expression is only $25, and you can do that at thefire.org/blocked. Those who donate $25 or more gain access to insider perks like a personalized membership and invitations to FIRE events and conferences, and a one-year subscription to FIRE Quarterly Magazine.
The events are awesome. They're really, really fun. Join this very important movement, not just for the events, at thefire.org/blocked.
That's thefire.org/blocked. We are a podcast. You can reach us at blockedandreportedpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a subreddit that you can find on, I don't know the address. It's reddit.com/something. You can find it. Google it. We also have a merch store, but please don't buy any of our merch. It's a long story, the merch store. Not reliable. Not our fault. Also, don't waste your money on the merch. Most importantly, if you would like to become a premium subscriber, you can join us at blockedandreported.org. And if you do that, you will get at least 3 episodes of this podcast ad-free, early access every single month. That is the best way to support the show. And while Jesse is on book leave, if you are missing him for some unknown reason, that is the best place to hear him because he is still doing our premium episodes. I think that's it. Let me see. Email address, Reddit. Don't buy the merch. Join the Substack. I think that's it. All right. River, you've got the wheel.
Katie, does the name Susan Boyle ring any bells for you?
Yes. Susan Boyle, she was on like the English equivalent of one of the singing shows. Is that right? Pop Idol, something like that.
I think it was Britain's Got Talent.
Britain's Got Talent. Okay. She was like sort of a, she looked like she would be like an elementary school teacher maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Motherly looking, matronly looking, had like a, you know, like a perm from the 90s, if I recall. Very popular, became like a real, real cultural sensation.
Yeah, yeah. And she sang like a Les Mis song in her audition. And Everybody was surprised because it was like the early 2000s. And I guess people thought just like if you were unattractive, you couldn't sing show tunes back then, which is crazy because I mean they say politics or show business for ugly people, but if you ever see musical theater, I mean
you know, the early 2000s, looking up back on it, this was really the heyday for judgment over people's appearances. We could do body talk in the early 2000s. No more. You were allowed to call people fat.
Yeah, it was like I mean, people are still mean now, but now you have to like politicize your meanness,
right? You can only punch up now.
Yeah.
You pretend that you're punching up.
Right,
now.
Exactly. So the reason I bring up Susan Boyle is because last September, someone hacked Susan Boyle's Spotify and uploaded this song. Chilling in my iced out Prada frames. I just wanna fuck, don't wanna know your name. I'll be looking holy in my $1,000 Miu Miu boot. Cause I wanna fuck tonight after Bible study's over. Can you come to my apartment? Maybe we can have a soda.
Oh my god. Okay. All right. I should say also the art for this on the YouTube page is it's a pink background. There's the Playboy Bunny logo, and then it's the page is covered with condoms.
Condoms and
diamonds?
Fake diamonds.
Fake diamonds. Cubic zirconium. Okay, yes. Gorgeous song. Love it. Was this Susan Boyle?
No, it was not. So people, by which I mean heterosexuals, British tabloids, Susan Boyle fans. My grandma had her CD, actually.
Your grandma's probably my age.
She has a son that's younger than me. I have an uncle who is 2 years younger than me. And it's not like a weird step-parent thing. It's like my grandma straight up got pregnant after. Yeah. Anyway, so they were confused about why their song called Anal Queen uploaded to Susan, autistic Scottish woman's Spotify.
And how old is Susan Boyle?
62. So, yeah, people were confused, but I was not confused. I knew exactly who was responsible.
Okay, who? And how did you know this?
The deranged fans of a mysterious transsexual pop star named Ayesha Erotica. That is who was responsible. And the way I know this is because they've been doing this forever. They upload her music everywhere, despite the fact that this is a woman who tried several years ago to completely disappear herself from the music industry, from the internet. But they just keep uploading her music. They stole her Spotify. They apparently stole Susan Boyle's Spotify now. They'll upload music to YouTube. Ayesha Erotica will get it taken down. They'll upload it again. This has been a cycle that's happening for years.
Is this a cis woman or a trans woman?
Trans woman.
Okay.
I said mysterious transsexual pop star.
Okay. Ayesha Erotica.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little too cunt for a cis woman to think. What do you think about this? Have you ever heard the term hyperpop, which is what this genre is called? And what do you think about it as a sort of like Brandi Carlile dyke?
I find it disgusting. And I'm talking musically, not just in terms of the content. No, I have never heard the term hyperpop before. But yes, I am a Brandi Carlile dyke.
We've heard of Charlie XCX, Sophie.
Sophie, I heard of after she died. This was a trans woman who committed suicide or OD'd or something a couple years ago. Is that correct?
I think it was an accident, actually.
Oh, okay.
She was like she was climbing up on the roof of like an apartment in Athens, like trying to like look at the stars or something. And then she like slipped and fell and died. Yeah, it's very tragic.
Oh, man. Okay. I don't know why I heard.
Because she's trans.
I'm just coming from it from more like an American opioid crisis thing. But yes, it's because she's trans. Charlie XCX. I've also heard of this person, but I thought she was like a TikTok star.
Charlie XCX. No, I think she has like a Grammy. No, she's like a legitimate pop star.
I listen to Joni Mitchell. What can I say?
Yeah. So no, hyperpop is this genre or maybe like a movement within pop music or something. And it sort of takes the aesthetics and the sound of like early aughts pop music. Think Paris Hilton's One Album or like early Britney Spears' Toxic, like that sort of thing. And just takes all of that to like its logical conclusion, kind of like it almost seems like a parody of it in some ways, which also explains like why the cover of the Ayesha Erotica song has like the Playboy bunny and like the, you know, hot pink and the all of that.
And the intended audience for this music, I'm assuming,
is fags.
Okay.
yeah, absolutely. Gayer than Christmas time. And I would say that Ayesha is probably the purest example of the hyperpop artist, even though she didn't create the genre. It was created in the UK. It was this label called PC Music, started by an artist named Alex G, Charlie XCX, Sophie, all these other people are kind of involved. It's kind of a UK thing that quickly came over to America. We have 100 Gex and Ayesha Erotica, Slater, all these other people who, if you're not gay, you probably don't know who they are. But I mean, Charlie XCX, I think people probably know, except for lesbians, I guess. Ayesha is, I guess, more underground. She's never signed with a major label or anything. But I think she has a lot of influence on the way that pop music sounds today because a lot of people in the industry kind of listen to her. She's worked, ghostwritten for a lot of people in the industry. But she's actively tried to avoid fame.
Okay, why? What sort of gay man doesn't want to be famous? I'm sorry, what sort of...
He's getting really transphobic now.
I'm sorry. Why doesn't she want to be famous?
Well, like you, Jesse, pretty much everyone else on the internet in the 2010s, she got canceled. The whole Aisha Erotica saga is sort of hard to reconstruct because this scandal happened a few years ago and most of the original evidence has been deleted, but... with the help of various online rumor mills, your lovely homosexual researcher, Chasing Woodgrains, as well as Nick Malone from the Thought Topics podcast, which is very funny. You should all check it out. I've tried to piece this together as best I can. So first thing of note, Aisha Erotica is a woman of many names. Aisha Nicole Smith, Miss Cheeseburger, Pussy Sugar, Alyssa Milani, Lisa Schultz, odd, huh. McKenna Sherm, Zuzi, Aisha Gucci, Cola LaFleur, just to name a few. There's also her government name, which I won't reveal, even though her psychotic stans have listed it on her official fan wiki, Aishapedia, I presume against her wishes. But she's best known as Aisha Erotica, so I'm just going to call her that.
Okay.
Aisha started making music on SoundCloud in the early 2010. She was like a teenager when this happened, under various aliases, making up demos for other niche artists. It was more like hip hop, rap adjacent stuff, like really bad, kind of like Nicki Minaj impression, I would say. None of it really caught on at the time, but a lot of it came back to haunt her later, and we'll get to that. She adopted the name Aisha Erotica around 2015, started pumping out a ton of music. A lot of it's really jokey. I have yet to find an Aisha Erotica song that I feel like is written from the heart. she's like teased like two separate albums and later scrapped them. And around 2017, she really starts to figure out what's now regarded as her signature style, producing songs that would later go like super viral on like certain corners of, I wouldn't even say certain corners of TikTok. I heard them in like all kinds. It's like straight women you're even listening. Let's listen to a clip. This one's called Literal Legend.
Listen up, bitch. I came. Is that Blair White on the cover art there?
No, that's Aisha Erotica. She actually kind of does a little bit like Blair White.
She's like Blair White. She looks like Blair White without eyebrows.
Yeah, like more Hispanic.
Like 2000s eyebrows, yeah.
Yeah. There's another one called Vacation Bible School, which is sort of her preeminent... I would say it's like the closest thing to like a real pop song she's ever made. It was part of a scrapped album that she described as a quote-unquote horny Christian album. Does it bring you back to the early aughts, Katie?
It brings me back to Vacation Bible School.
Around the time that she's producing this sort of music, she's also producing music for her friend Slater, who at this point, I would say, is fairly famous pop star, like has a Wikipedia page at least, and, you know, gets reviews and Pitchfork and all that sort of stuff, does shows that sell out pretty well. For instance, she... Aisha produced this song for her called Hello Kitty. I got a rappy on my sheets when I wake up.
I got a cute little logo printed on my makeup. You know, I've been thinking about getting a new theme song for the show. This might be it.
Yeah, it's a very catchy song.
Yeah.
I legitimately like this type of music, which I mean, because I'm a fag.
This is good music to do meth to.
Absolutely. Or even Adderall.
Or Adderall,
yeah. The doctor's meth. things really start to blow up with a song called Dial Tone, which Aisha is featured on and also produced, I believe, in that it's a collaboration between Aisha Erotica, an artist called That Kid, and Slater. We could play a clip from that real quick. It's a perfect song if you're doing a call-in show, I think.
Hello?
I cannot believe people like this music.
This is giving me a migraine.
Well, imagine you're like a cunty Rush Limbaugh and you're doing like an AM radio call-in show. This would be a perfect theme song. So before this, her music had been sort of like hip-hop adjacent, not very good, but her new sound and like, the fact that she's kind of blowing up a little bit and Slater is definitely blowing up. You know, this new music was more refined and a total embrace of the hyperpop genre, which had been developed, as we said earlier, mostly in the UK by people like Alex G, Charlie XCX, Sophie, etc. Actually, even embrace of hyperpop might be an understatement. She was essentially taking all the trappings of the genre, like the Y2K nostalgia, the sort of saccharine, plastic, sped-up nature of it all, to its logical conclusions. She was doing it pretty well, maybe too well for her own good, actually.
What do you mean by that, too well?
Here's what I mean. So by early 2018, Aisha was getting kind of allergic to the attention that she was getting, which isn't really surprising. Over the years, she adopted a ton of pseudonyms and was known for canceling projects and deleting music, even when people liked it. So she's sort of toying around with the idea of quitting music at this point, or at least wanted to take a backseat and start producing under a pseudonym for Slater and other more other people who I suppose wanted to be more legitimate public-facing pop stars. And her association with Slater is really what gets her in trouble. So basically, and again, shout out to Nick Mullen from Thought Topics who helped clear up some things here. Charlie XCX stans, who are apparently known as Charlie's Angels, in the way that fans of Nicki Minaj are called Barbs or whatever, or the Bay Hive.
We have barflies here.
Oh, really? That's great.
Well, nobody calls them that but me, but yes.
Yeah. They really get mad at Slater because she's becoming more and more popular, and they feel like she, and therefore Aisha, who's producing Ghostwriting for her, are ripping off Charlie XCX's style. Charlie XCX fans start going after Slater, digging up old cam girl footage of her, you know, nasty stuff like that. And then one of the Charlie XCX stans, a guy named Void 4 Angel, goes after Aisha and uploads a ton of information about her on DoxFin. We're talking about Aisha's legal name, which had never been public before, her home address, her mother's name. And from what I understand, people use that information on DoxFin to find her day job, pre-transition photos, lots of stuff like that. So for reasons that aren't very clear, Aisha jumps to conclusions and blames Quinn Fatale, who's a SoundCloud artist and a client of hers, for the doxing.
Wait, I'm curious, what was her day job?
I don't know. And I think a lot of the people who are posting it, like I think all of that's like been taken down because this happened in around 2018.
Okay, if anybody listening here knows what Aisha Erotica's day job is, please write me.
Yeah.
I'm imagining like insurance adjuster.
Yeah, I think it was just like a normal office job.
Yeah.
Because like at this point, it is a weird place to be in your career that I actually kind of feel like I related to a little bit when I first started writing, because I, as you said, I tweet like I don't have a boss, and I also kind of write like I don't have a boss. And I did have a boss, like a corporate boss, like an advertising agency at the time. I was always terrified that they were going to find my stuff. But I was also like, the reason that people like my writing is because I'm kind of funny, and I kind of like go all in on people. And like, if I actually want to break into this field, I have to kind of be like this.
If you had wanted to like rise in the ranks of like an accounting firm, you probably should have been in it on.
Right.
If you want to be a writer.
Yeah, I have like, a full legal name on my Twitter.
Yeah. That is a risk, though. Like, it worked out for you, but definitely a risk to because what if Pirate Wire hadn't picked you up?
Yeah. So anyway, she's at this point, like I was at maybe in like 2021, 2022 or something, where you're doing this creative thing that you're getting some attention for and like doing fairly well in it, but it's not paying your bills. So you still have to have this day job. And I think, you know, it was kind of like, fuck, I'm quitting. I'm getting out. This was like the final getting doxxed. Was like the final straw for her. And so she basically deletes all of her music, deletes all of her social media, essentially tries to delete herself from the internet, which is not possible, and especially not when your fans are as crazy as hers. So people keep reposting your music everywhere, YouTube, Spotify, whatever. A furry apparently stole her official Spotify account.
Of course it was a fucking furry.
Yeah.
Crafty. I bet it was a fox. They're crafty.
Yeah, yeah. By design.
Or a weasel.
So they also, in addition to posting pretty much all the music that Aisha had, you know, deleted after she got doxxed, they start posting things that she had deleted a long time before, because she did have this history of, like, you know, changing her mind and deciding that she didn't like what she put out, and so just deleting it. I don't think it's ever been confirmed, but I think that she may have been on, you know, like coke or something. Maybe we shouldn't suspect. But, like, I mean, you don't make this type of music without the use of drugs. So I think there was probably some, like, moments of sobriety there where she was just like, why not just upload a song about, you know, called Anal Queen or whatever.
What did I do?
Yeah. They are posting stuff that she deleted, like, long before she got doxxed. And somehow they've even gotten a hold of music that she never even posted, just like demos and stuff. Mm. I'm not sure exactly how.
So they hacked her or something.
They hacked her. I think some of it was demos that she did for other artists that they had somehow either hacked those people or, you know, whatever. This is when her music starts going, like, viral on TikTok and stuff. She's already kind of out of the picture at this point. Her fame, like, continues to grow in her absence, because people are uploading all and, like, just troves and troves, like, hundreds of songs, I think, at this point, if you went through all of them.
Jesus.
Most of them very bad, but some of them pretty good. And if you like that type of music, this inadvertently, this new found fame or whatever, or increasing fame, inadvertently leads to a new round of controversies about racism, of course. So there's two prongs to this. The first has to do with a song that she had ghostwritten for Brandon Miller / Miss Prada / Joanne the Scammer, who's a half black, half Puerto Rican drag queen, called Heroin AIDS Chlamydia.
Heroin AIDS Chlamydia. Heroin AIDS Chlamydia.
My pussy tastes like Gatorade. Cucumber squirt all in his face. I squeal so loud like a hearing aid. Had to turn it down, I got a noise complaint. My body look like Goldie Hawn. Pushed up my tits and it turns him on. Said he jacks off to a Prada song. He's part Chinese, Ching Wong Ding Dong. Everybody knows I'm a racist bitch. I got two grandkids from a nigga dick.
Okay, so if anybody can hear those lyrics, if your brain shut down while that was playing, she says the N-word, soft A N-word. Very problematic.
Yeah. But all of her music kind of is. And I guess we should clarify, Aisha Erotica is not black. She's Hispanic of some kind, at least judging by her appearance and legal name. But she was ghost. Yes, the song is problematic, but she ghostwrote it for somebody else.
Okay, so is she the person whose voice that is? Is that her, or was this like,
that's Aisha?
Okay, this is a demo, so she wrote this for somebody else, for an actual black person,
right?
Okay, there is. I hope that person is also part Asian, because she does have a song. She does have a line. He's part Chinese, Ching Wong Ding Dong Ding Dong.
Yeah, he's not actually. He's half Puerto Rican, half black. But
you know what? It's okay to be racist against Asians. They're white adjacent anyway.
I believe this was 2015, 2016-ish. I would have to, like, look at the exact date. But,
you know, I would like to know what the exact date was that it stopped being acceptable for people of any race to sing the like soft A N-word.
Yeah, like if you're doing karaoke or something.
Right. If you're singing to, like, an old dirty bastard song or whatever, it used to be acceptable to sing it, and now you just have to, you probably, like, not even mouth the word, just, like, silently close it.
You just have to completely close
it. You have to do the radio edit now if you're a white person. But at some point, like, younger people might not believe me. It was completely socially acceptable for white people to say the soft A N-word in the context of, like, a song.
Yeah.
There was a distinction between the hard R and the soft A. There really was.
But people, I mean, obviously, this is coming up, and it's like, you know, 17-year-old gay boys or whatever are the ones, like, getting mad at it.
Okay, so again, what was the name of the artist who she actually wrote this song for?
Of like all of these fuckers, multiple names. Brandon Miller, Miss Prada, Joanne the Scammer.
Okay, got it. Okay, so did that person who is black has permission to use the word, but probably not the Chinese chink-a-ding-dong song or line or whatever. So did that person defend her or respond or like have any statement after the song leaked?
Not that I saw, no.
Did she have any defenders?
She did. That kid who's also black, who she did Dial Tone with, defended her and essentially said, I just talked to Aisha. It's not even her song. She would never say the N-word. But she did say the N-word on songs that she didn't write for other people. That's when the second prong to the racism controversy comes out, where people find old clips of her when she was performing under the name Cola DeFlare, or Cola LaFlare, excuse me, where it was like, it's SoundCloud rap and she's doing the Soft A again. So fans kind of excuse this as, you know, she was young, and she was young. I believe she was still in high school when she was making this. She didn't know any better.
She hadn't been educated yet.
Right, exactly. And again, I mean, this was like 2013, 2014 when she was making this music. So it was kind of a different environment, at least in music. I feel like you could kind of say it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a fucking teenager. Like, I mean, you know, and you're posting anonymously on the internet.
Right.
I don't know, Katie. Did you ever use the Soft A at any point during the Obama administration?
You know, I'm sure that I was a big fan of Biggie Smalls. I'm sure that I like rapped along, you know,
of course,
yeah. I'm sure that I did. But mostly I listened to like Joni Mitchell and Brandi Carlile, who don't really use the N-word that often. You know, I've been thinking,
as far as we know,
you know, I've been thinking, I watched the Dave Chappelle show, the like new Dave Chappelle special recently. And I was thinking about like, there's this idea, you know, you'll see this in discourse a lot, like, people accusing white people of just like, we're just all like dying to use the N-word. Mm-hmm. And I have never found that to be true, except after I watched this special, I was like, I want to say nigga. I want to call my friends. It's such a good word.
It is, yeah.
I mean, I probably can't even play. Do you think Jesse's going to get so mad at me if I say it on this show? But yeah, I do think it's a great word. It's just, it seems so positive. You're talking about your friends, but it's like a real catch-all. It's like the John, you know, that word that they say in Philly. Mm-hmm. So I do have some jealousy. I don't want to say it racistly. I want to say it anti-racistly.
Yeah. See, that's why you shouldn't try to ban words. Because
right.
Then, you know,
right.
I mean,
they become appealing. It's like smoking.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to Aisha. In August of 2023, a month before the Susan Boyle incident, Aisha returns to music. She creates a new social media, does a small show at this smaller venue in LA. She apologizes for using the N-word and that she was young and mentally ill, but she says it's no excuse.
I think that's an excuse.
It is kind of an excuse.
I'm dumb and crazy. Or I'm young and crazy. Yeah, that's an excuse.
Yeah. She sort of disavows her old music because she says it doesn't, she feels it doesn't represent her anymore and encourages bad behavior.
Does she take out a guitar and she's going to play like an acoustic coffee shop?
Yeah, she's going to go full Jewel.
Yeah, nice. Yes.
God, I hope not. But she says that, but then she also says she's going to release her canceled album, Horny for You. So it's not really clear like whether or not she, which is the Horny Christian album, I believe. So she's like, I'm.
And when she says Horny for You, she's talking about Jesus.
Right, yeah. So I'm not actually, it's not completely clear to me what her old actual stance on her old music is or what she was referring to. Maybe she was just referring to like her saying the N-word when she was like 15.
Right.
She's also trying to get her Spotify back from that furry. But her fans are still posting a lot of her old music everywhere. She still doesn't really have control over, you know, her output, like her content. It's not entirely clear to me like why she wanted to come back, but I suspect it's because her attempts to escape internet fame have failed and she's only become more famous and now there's kind of money to be made.
She also seems talented. I mean, the music is absolutely horrific, but I can see that if you're like a gay man with like a meth pipe in one hand and a cock in the other, like this could be, this
right.
could be like really good party tunes.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's, I don't know, I'm just fascinated by stan culture because it's really one of the most, I mean, I feel like you could probably get along with like straight up Nazis or something easier on the internet, or like political people are like, I think even less vicious than the stans. Like they're really fucking crazy. I don't know if you saw the video of the Nicki Minaj stan who like flew to from LA to Phoenix to like fight another guy or something. It's crazy.
Yeah, stan culture is really crazy and kind of terrifying. We did an episode a while back about some drama in K-pop standoms, and they, it seems like some of these pop stars or whoever they are, some of these stars have good reason to be scared of their own fans.
But it's interesting because you actually need these people now. Like there is, they do serve a purpose in the music industry, which is sort of terrifying, I guess. Now if you don't have a stan army, like you're gonna flop on the internet, because it's not just like the way it used to be where they send your record to you know, you have a couple of labels, they, and the labels essentially decide what's going to be on the radio and what people hear and all of that. Now it's all earned media through people spamming, you know, your new single everywhere.
Yeah.
And so you actually have to engage with these people to a certain extent. And if you want to break into the music industry, especially if you don't have the connections, and yeah, it just creates this really insane soap opera for everyone. And if you've ever been canceled like by stan Twitter, like it's, do not talk about pop music on the internet.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to defend yourself. I've had my K-pop stans posted my full address on Twitter one time.
Why? What did you do? Why did, what did you do to deserve this? How did you disrespect BTS?
It actually had nothing to do with K-pop, which is interesting. It was some sort of like, I mean, this was like peak BLM or something. And I was criticizing, if I remember correctly, this is a while back, I was criticizing the Teflar bag. Are you familiar with this?
No.
These bags are ridiculously small. Like it looks absurd. And so I criticized the Teflar bag. I said it was ugly or something. People came after me and they were like, well, it's made by a queer black person and it's ethically made. And I looked it up. It's made in China. And so I sort of kept posting about it. And I was like, this is made, I was like, it's made in a Chinese sweatshop. And the fact that a gay black guy designed it doesn't change that. And it's also still fucking ugly. And then this was at the peak of the Adderall addiction. And then people started coming for me. Somehow, I don't know how K-pop Twitter got involved, but they did. And they started coming after me. And someone was like, well, you're racist if you don't support black-owned businesses. And I posted a picture of myself with Shea Moisture leave-in hair conditioner, which I do actually use. And I was like supporting black-owned businesses. And then they really just came after me. I got my full address posted. My husband's like, what the fuck? Why is our address on the way? It's a Google Maps screenshot of our apartment here. And yeah, I mean, they're just, because they're all connected, they're all hyper online and connected to each other. So if you piss them off, even in a way that has nothing to do with their fucking music, yeah, they'll come for you. And it's very scary.
Yes. Well, did Susan Boyle stans, did they end up fighting with Aisha Erotica fans, or are they all dead at this point?
I don't think they're online.
They're on Facebook.
It was just, except for the ones who were really confused and like calling the Daily Mail, and they were like, can you please investigate
this? Did she ever say anything about it?
No, not that I could see.
She probably doesn't know, frankly.
Probably not, no. It's probably better that she doesn't. It was funny, though, because people were like, maybe she's just trying out a new sound, because nobody knew.
Dude, seriously. She should do a remix. The Susan Boyle Anal Queen remix would be a hit.
It would.
All right, thank you for this, River. I'm going to go, I think, listen to some hyperpop. Do some meth and listen to some hyperpop.
Yeah, absolutely, you should.
All right, where can people find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at river_is_nice. And you can also find my work on Pirate Wires. I also co-host our weekly podcast, which is just called Pirate Wires. And you can find that wherever podcasts are sold.
All right, River, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been Blocked and Reported. Our show is produced, as always, with help from Tracing Woodgrains and Jessica, the 80s baby. I'm Katie Herzog, and we will be back next week with a new guest host.